This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:48 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Xiaoning and Chen Li. Now, for the first time in Johor's history, a total of 10 parties and 239 candidates have thrown their hats in the ring for the state election, contesting for 56 seats in the state assembly. That's a huge amount of candidates. It's a lot of competition.
Can you even keep up?
Exactly. So the two main coalitions on opposing sides in this election are Barisan Nasional, which was the ruling party prior to the dissolution of the state legislative assembly, and Pakatan Harapan, who was the winner of GE14 before their abrupt removal from power.
And the other major contenders are the Perikatan National Coalition, which shared the ruling party ruling power with Barisan Nasional prior to dissolution and is now gunning for all the 56 seats. There is not a single straight fight in the Johor election this time around, because it's dominated by mostly four-cornered fights. And this election also features two seven-cornered contests, four six-cornered contests, eight five-cornered contests, and seven three-cornered contests. And the bulk of the 35 four-cornered contests are in Malay majority and some semi-urban seats.
Added to that is that this year is the first time we're going to see Undi 18 and automatic voter registration being included in the state elections. So an inclusion of more than 700,000 new voters. This makes 2.59 million voters eligible to cast their ballots this time. And the EC, the Election Commission, is actually targeting a 70% voter turnout. So how will the elections play out? What will determine voter turnout? And has the mood shifted back to UMNO NBN?
So for more thoughts on this, we have with us Ibrahim Sufian, Program Director for the Merdeka Center. Ben, good morning. Thanks for joining us today. Can we start with the hundreds of thousands of new voters on the electoral rolls? This will be the first election that sees Undi 18 and automatic voter registration in effect. So put that into context for us. What's the significance of having more than 700,000 new voters in this state election?
Yeah, having over 700,000 voters is significant because it increases the number of voters in the state by nearly 30%. And this is unprecedented, because year on year in the past, we would only see perhaps a 2 to 3% rise in the number of voters, and net, you know, on each election cycle, you get to see about maybe 10% or 12% tops, you know, increase in the previous election. But this time we see nearly one-third new voters, you know, potentially being able to vote for the first time.
Do we have a general demographic of who these new voters are? And are they more in the urban or the rural areas?
Yeah, we do have demographics now that the electoral roll that's going to be used for the election has been issued. In terms of just overall demographics, we find that only about, you know, just under 200,000, I think it's about 150,000 people, actually belong to the 18 to 21 years old group. The remainder are actually first-time voters, people who were originally eligible but didn't register to vote. That number is close to slightly above 500,000 people. So these people, many of them are still young, below 30 years old, but they didn't vote in 2018. And I think it's going to affect how people show up for voting this coming time. The other aspect is in terms of where they are located. Many of the new voters are located in urban and suburban areas, a lot lower numbers in rural areas. And I think it's because of where people live these days and how, you know, the demographics in the country has changed. More people have left the rural areas and moved out to the cities. And so we see a proportionately much higher number of new voters in the suburban and urban seats.
Ben, the trillion-dollar question, of course, for these 700,000 new voters, do we have any indication or any idea who they might vote for?
Yeah, we have been running a couple of surveys ahead of this election. And in fact, we are in the middle of running a third round, just trying to, you know, ponder into this specific question. And what we're seeing right now is that for the new voters this time, the patterns are not very far off compared to the existing voters. And by that, I mean, number one, most voters, new voters or otherwise, continue to vote along communal lines, so along their ethnic groups, and therefore that colours their preferences for parties as well. Number two, we find that there is a difference in terms of turnout between much older voters and new voters. Older voters have a higher tendency or higher likelihood of showing up for election day, whereas for new voters, I think the tendency to come out to vote is perhaps in the region of 50 to 60%. So that's going to affect the state of play in this election. So I think the third point, and to conclude, is that the how they're going to vote, like I said, along ethnic parties, but there is a significant difference. Young people are more likely to vote for parties that are not establishment. So meaning to say, within their ethnic group or the parties that represent the ethnic group, they're less likely to vote for the established parties. So, for example, less of the young voters are going to vote for Barisan Nasional. More of them are going to vote for Perikatan Nasional or perhaps even MUDA. Slightly less for Pakatan Harapan.
And you mentioned the issue of voter turnout just now, Ben, and the fact that this will have an impact on the elections, regardless of the fact that we have so many new voters. But if they don't come out, we're not going to see that impact. What do you think will be the factors that will determine voter turnout?
Well, I think right now, a lot of people are fatigued about politics. So especially young people who feel that the politics is happening at a plain level above them and doesn't really touch on the issues that concern them. So there is a big disconnect between young people and political parties these days. Number two is also the difficulty for political parties and leadership to reach out to young people. Although we keep saying about, oh, you know, you can use social media and so on. But the thing is, for young people existing within, you know, digital natives, you know, they basically consume everything on social media. So political news and information needs to compete with other things in order to get at them. So that's one. Number two is a general feeling that, you know, politics of the country has not solved the problems of ordinary people, and it's meant to solve the problems of the politicians. And people feel, you know, this big gap between themselves, the issues they face on a daily basis, and that of government. And I think also for young people, they want to see instant results, and these results are not forthcoming.
And if we were to look at the Johor electoral as a whole, historically it has been the UMNO Barisan Nasional stronghold, but that can change. That actually changed in GE14. But has the emergence of new opposition parties worked in BN's favour?
Yeah, I mean, this is the interesting development, you know, what we're seeing, the surveys that we've done. I mean, by no means is this fully accurate, but it does give an indication of where things are heading. You know, number one, we found that, you know, overall, you know, popular vote support, we are thinking that it is likely for Barisan Nasional support to actually shrink a little, to be reduced a little bit compared to the past. And the reason is because the influx of new voters, many of them are not choosing Barisan Nasional, especially Malay and non-Malay voters are not choosing Barisan Nasional. You know, by and large, but maybe 80% aren't choosing BN. But for young Malays, you know, we found that many people of them, many numbers of them, perhaps, you know, 40, 50% even, are choosing Perikatan Nasional. But those numbers are not enough to fill in the gap. And the reason is because a lot of these Malay political parties that have recently emerged, you know, have fragmented the Malay votes. And so Barisan Nasional has a strong advantage to win this election, in part because its opponents are divided and fragmented.
Okay, let's talk about the opponents. Let's talk about Pakatan Harapan. You remarked earlier that actually when it comes to the younger voters, they might vote for the non-establishment parties, but the loser sounds like Pakatan Harapan. Why is that the case?
Well, you know, this is, I would say, the sad thing about our politics, in the sense that so many things are defined along ethnic or racial lines. And Pakatan Harapan, for the bulk of many young voters, are not seen to be representing the Malay interest very strongly. And I think that also, you know, partly speaks to the reason why, you know, PKR tries to kind of distance itself away by adopting its own logo rather than the Pakatan Harapan logo. So that's their solution to this problem. And so that's, I think, the main problem. The anti-establishment party is seen differently along different communities. Among the young voters, Malay voters make up a much bigger proportion, you know, close to 70-75%. So they have a bigger say in terms of where their votes are going to go. So many of them, I think, feel that, you know, Barisan Nasional hasn't changed enough, but they can't quite bring themselves to vote for Pakatan Harapan. So they're going to go for the alternative party, like, you know, Perikatan Nasional.
And can parallels be drawn between this election and the 2021 Melaka state elections?
Yeah, there is, I think, an emerging pattern that closely resembles that of the Melaka election. And in the Melaka election, we found that for Chinese voters and non-Malay voters, the voting preference for Pakatan Harapan did not significantly change. I think marginally, maybe 1 or 2%. What really mattered there was the turnout amongst non-Malay voters. It was exceedingly low, I think less than 55%, something like that. It's very low. But within Malay voters, there was a clear split in the sense that only about half of Malay voters chose Barisan Nasional. And we're seeing the same pattern emerge in Johor as well. Perhaps in Johor, the level for Barisan Nasional is higher. We just need to remember that in 2018, Johor BN achieved about 60% of the Malay support. We're seeing that this time round, they'll come in slightly under that, maybe a couple of percent lower than 50% or 60%. But yet, that has little impact in terms of their winnability because their opponents are split up. And so the patterns are somewhat the same that Pakatan Harapan achieved about 36% of Malay votes in 2018. We think it will probably lose half of that. And that half is going to go to Perikatan Nasional. So Perikatan Nasional will absorb a significant transfer of voters from Pakatan Harapan, but at the end of the calculus, it may not be enough for Perikatan Nasional to win because very little of non-Malay voters are considering Perikatan Nasional at this point in time. So okay, this gives Perikatan Nasional a strong advantage.
All right. Thank you so much for speaking to us this morning. That was Ben Sufian, Program Director for the Merdeka Center, talking to us about patterns in Johor, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.